This is Seattle's Morning News, and let's go to London now and CBS correspondent Vicky Barker. Vicky, what's the state of coronavirus in Europe?
Spreading, in a word, unfortunately. 13 cases now confirmed here in the UK. Now, all of those cases are or were in quarantine, but in Italy, it's a completely different situation. That's got the highest number of corona cases in Europe. We've got 5 dead there, more than 200 confirmed cases. Milan's Fashion Week has been cut short. So has the carnival in Venice. We've got several towns in the north under lockdown. I mean, 50,000 people not allowed to leave their home communities without special permission. And they've got, you know, they've got police guarding entrances to these towns that are in the epicenter of this as yet unexplained outbreak, because so far none of the Italian cases have any apparent connection with China. The fears that coronavirus maybe has, you know, slipped out of the bottle are really starting to spread. And it isn't just Europe. In Iran, officially the death toll there is 12, but an Iranian lawmaker has spoken out because he said in his home city there have been 50 deaths from coronavirus alone. So I think you're seeing it reflected in stocks in Europe. Most European stock markets down about 3% this hour, Dave.
Now, we don't know the method of transmission or whether this is, can be traced back to China or whether this is, I mean, we are in flu season. Now, are these cases that would have normally been described as simply a normal flu outbreak, but because of coronavirus, we now talk about it as if it was something special?
Well, that's a really, really good point. As far as anyone's been able to figure out, the mortality rate for the coronavirus is looking at about 2%. Now, you know, that's roughly what your average flu is. In contrast, you know, the death rate from the SARS outbreak a few years ago was something like 30%. But here is the thing. Coronavirus is much, much, much more contagious than SARS. The calculation is that every person who's infected goes on to infect another 5 people. We'll do the math of that. I was terrible at math, but I can see how, for instance, some British health, public health experts have said that if coronavirus gets unleashed here in the UK, you could eventually see 50% of the population infected. And what that means is the same people who would normally be most vulnerable to dying of an ordinary flu, you know, those with respiratory illnesses, the frail, the old, the ill, they are going to be put at risk and are numerically much more likely to be put at risk with a flu virus as contagious as this one.
Now, I know that there's been some reluctance to officially label this as a pandemic. Assuming it is, what would change at that point? Would we see widespread travel restrictions?
Well, I think we're already starting to see widespread travel restrictions. And, I'm not a WHO scientist. They're the ones who determine whether it is a pandemic or not. I don't know what the infection rate has to be in what percentage of countries for it to be ruled as such, but they are saying it is an emergency. And you're seeing it's a tough one. In China, which is a much more authoritarian state than us Western democracies, they've tried to absolutely shut down entire cities, entire factories. We're seeing piecemeal enforcement efforts in Europe and in Italy. As I said, there are guards at the entrances to some of the towns, in the hotspot areas. But a lot of the area where the coronavirus has been found is around Milan. You know, it's heavily, heavily populated. In the UK, at one point, they were the police were granted special powers to enforce people staying in quarantine. As far as we know, that hasn't had to be used. It may have come about because one of the initial evacuees from China may have gotten a little bit restive under quarantine in a British hospital, and they passed that through to make the point across. But, it's hard to see how you stop how you stop epidemics, particularly in democracies where, you know, not just entire countries, but individual communities may have, you know, a certain amount of independence.
Yeah. So there in London, I mean, have you started wearing a mask? I mean, what are people doing in the street?
No, but I did notice that when I walked into my health club this morning, there was a big sign up saying that if you experience any coughs or fevers, to basically please don't enter.
Vicky Barker in London. Vicky, thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Our legislative correspondent, Hannah Scott, is here this morning. And one of the changes being considered is how prisoners are supervised after being released. And you're telling me that the cops are not too high on this. Huh?
Yes, there's a couple of things going on here. So there's a trio of proposals that passed the House last week that are basically reforming the way our community corrections custody, or supervision system works. And that's parole or probation in our state, basically. One of the bills would change, do away with mandatory jail time for violations. So an offender gets out of jail, they're on community supervision. The court sets a variety of things they have to do, whether that's treatment or meeting certain conditions, you know, not doing any drugs or drinking, things like that. Mm-hmm. Right now, violations are mandatory jail time for between 3 and 30 days, depending on which violation
so
you're at.
If you're told not to drink and you do drink, mm-hmm. you go back to jail.
Yes, depending on which violation number it is, how many there are. And that's an issue, and that's something they're doing away with in one of the bills. This is Representative Roger Goodman.
We want to treat a minor violation like a minor violation and not arbitrarily treat it like a major violation and really kind of ruin their lives by reincarcerating them unnecessarily. So the bill provides that a minor violation such as not attending a meeting, maybe they missed a bus and maybe they were able to make it the next day, minor violations like that will be treated as minor violations rather than arbitrarily locking them up, which is very expensive and also ruins the path to, successful reintegration in the community for these offenders.
So this is all part of something we'll see much more of in the next legislative session, which is all kinds of sentencing reform, right? Mm-hmm. Criminal justice reform, trying to make sure we get to the problem, focus in on treatment and things like that with offenders when we're talking about somebody dealing with drug issues or mental health issues. And community custody is the first thing that they're going to address, and that's going to be this session. So one of the other bills would, right now, if you're on community custody for multiple crimes, so you're convicted of multiple different crimes, each crime comes with its own supervision requirements after you get out. Right now, you're serving those one after the other after the other. This bill would make it so they're all done at once. And that's one of the big concerns among law enforcement is because it's less time, right? You're on supervision for less time than you would be. But the reason behind that is to focus what you're doing, all of the conditions of each of the crimes you've been convicted of at once.
The law is currently unclear, and the supervision is really not consistent. The conditions imposed are not imposed all at the same time, and we need to layer the conditions that they need to meet and the prohibitions imposed on them all at the same time in order to make sure that they're not committing other crimes and that they're getting their treatment. And it's just much better for public safety.
And they've got all kinds of research to back this up. So instead of being on 2 years community supervision here for this crime and then another 2 years over here where only these conditions are required, lump them all together and we can get you your mental health treatment, your drug treatment, your whatever the different conditions might be.
So in other words, instead of having three different crimes with three different types of supervision, mm-hmm. let's find out what's going on in this person's life and fix it.
Right. And then you're going to have your specialized, much more focused community supervision officers who can hone in on those exact things to make sure we're actually helping people, keeping them from going back to jail, committing the same kind type of crimes. That's the idea. The third bill would do away with community supervision altogether for people who had good behavior while they were in lockup. The issue is, one, Assistant Seattle Police Chief Adrian Diaz says he supports criminal justice reforms, but there needs to be this kind of a focus.
The truth is, we need to do more for people who are trying to transition back to the community. We must do criminal justice the right way. We need to invest in programs that keep people from the criminal justice system, supporting people re-entering our communities, treatment for those that are incarcerated, and making sure that we are holding people accountable.
And again, that's what Representative Goodman and others behind these bills say this will do. The other big issue, we hear from Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chief Executive Director Steve Strand.
So the issue is there's money to be saved. I think the legislature has an interest in investing some of those dollars and investing future dollars in reentry and treatment. And that's the center of criminal justice reform that we're talking about. What we're asking for is a long-term permanent commitment. In other words, put it in a special dedicated account from now on, so that we don't have to have this every conversation every 2 years. And as the political winds shift, we may, you know, get away from this. The fact is, in the short term, I think the legislature is interested in this topic.
So the concern there is that the cops want this, any savings from this mm-hmm. program, these changes to the community supervision program, they want invested right back in to reentry and treatment programs is what the cops are saying. But they want that money in a special dedicated fund so that future legislators can't make a grab and use it for something else.
Yeah. So is there, it sounds like there's bipartisan support for this reform.
Unanimous then? Approval in the House.
Oh, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay. So nobody's saying, no, we've gone soft on.
No, not at all. This is the win that we're going to see. What gotcha. We have been doing has not been working. This is what we're going to change to. There's a lot of research to back it up. Everyone, including law enforcement, seems to support criminal justice reform. They just want the money yeah. to make sure that the cops have the backup for treatment, for reentry services, which we really are short on dollars for those kind of programs right now at every level. And it doesn't sound like they're going to get it. We are going to have budget release today. And I'm told from Representative Goodman, there's going to be $60 million or so that they're going to invest in the community supervision program for all of these bills. But it's not going to be in a special dedicated fund, I don't think. But those are rare, and you can still grab them anyway.
What's the progress on setting up mental health facilities that can take people who are in mental health emergencies and do it and give them what they need?
We invested a lot of money in last year's budget to start to create those. It's kind of part of a 5-year plan. A couple have come online already. More are about to come online throughout the next year, and then so on and so on. And then when budgets come out today, I think you'll see more money also invested in that. They're doing everything from making sure that it's easier for those who work in those facilities to get those jobs if they're coming from out of state, you know, clear out the red tape essentially to capital budget investments to make sure we can build more in various communities all over the state. So there's a lot going on.
Well, it's great that there seems to be consensus on that. So did you hear people say things like, we finally got a handle on this, and so we're doing it?
No, I don't think I have heard that. I know that there's been a...
This goes to the whole prolific offender thing, right?
This does, yes, to a certain degree. There's also an Involuntary Treatment Act bill that is going through, that is still alive, that is similar to what we heard from Senator Steve O'Bannon, that would have had that pilot program to force treatment. It's not quite as strong. It doesn't necessarily target repeat offenders as much as his did, but it would allow for some sort of forced treatment to a certain degree. So that bill is still alive, and that would
be... And the facilities to follow through on those orders will exist.
Will exist at some point, yes.
Okay.
At some point. So everybody's working on it, and we're definitely ahead
That's
of the
good.
Game compared to 2 years ago.
I'm glad to hear that. Hannah Scott, thank you.
You bet.
Seattle's Morning News. This is Dave Ross, and it's time to get Jill Schlesinger to reassure us about the we're getting butterflies now for some reason.
Right. I mean, overnight, there were a lot of concerns because the European and Asian markets were down pretty dramatically. And this is, in effect, a reaction to the information we received that the spread of the coronavirus has really started to hit other areas like South Korea and specifically Italy. And so overnight, we saw most of the European markets down around, let's call it 3-4%, with Italy obviously taking the brunt of the selling. We should also note that all of the markets in Asia are down. What is this really? This is this concept that investors had believed that the coronavirus was beginning to be contained just in China, and that despite new cases being reported, that there seemed to be a slowdown. And what's clear is that there are new infections that are being announced every day, not just in China. There are fewer infections actually in China, but these other areas are the ones that are causing concern. This means that all the fears of the last few weeks, which seem to have been tamped down, are rising up again. That's causing stocks to drop.
And this is because so many companies depend on China, or are we talking about the fact that people might not want to travel anywhere with the virus on the loose?
You know, I think that's a great question. I mean, I think that there are specific issues that are real. Obviously, when Apple announces that they're going to have to lower their earnings estimates for the next quarter because of this, that's a real impact, right? But I think that other places where we are seeing some concern is, for example, the travel industry. You know, worldwide, global travel back, I think the last year we have data for now is 2018. It's an almost $8 trillion industry. So if not just, you know, a cruise line stock goes down or air travel, but think about all of the tourist areas where there's a spillover, the restaurants, the hotels, the tour guides who are making less money, spending less money. And now there's a real fear that in Europe, this could spark a recession. Things were slowing down in Europe anyway, especially in Germany. If this starts to accelerate or persist, I think the fear is that we tip into a recession in some places that were already showing weakness.
On the positive side, Warren Buffett issued his annual stock memo and acknowledged not making the greatest decisions in the past year about Berkshire Hathaway, but still says in the long term, stocks are going to remain more attractive than any other asset if you want your money to grow. So you agree with him?
Really, this is the perfect paragraph for you to read if you're feeling nervous this morning or this afternoon or when you look at the close later today. You know, he said that essentially because interest rates are so low and because corporations are paying such bottom rate levels of taxes, that this does make stocks the most attractive asset class. But he says, you ready for this quote? That rosy prediction comes with a warning. Anything can happen to stock prices tomorrow. And tomorrow has come, ladies and gentlemen. And he goes on to write, occasionally there will be major drops in the market, perhaps a 50% magnitude or even greater. But equities will be the much better long-term choice for the individual who does not use borrowed money and who can control his or her emotions. Others, beware. This is the kind of day that will challenge you to control your emotions. You can feel them. Please don't act on them.
Yes. So this is the kind of day where people tend to make bad decisions that they're going to regret years down the road.
Indeed. And you know what? It's easy to fall into the trap. I get it. But what you really need to remind yourself is, I don't need my money for 3 hours or 3 months or even 3 years. Most people who are investing in stocks are doing so because they are long-term investors. And that means you are investing for the future. Even if you are 64 years old and you're retiring tomorrow, okay, you may say to yourself, this is scary. Of course it's scary, but hopefully not all of your money's in the stock market. And you're still investing for 25 years. You're still investing for a long period of your own retirement. So try not to react to these kinds of days.
And fundamentally, I just want to emphasize this. We're not talking about 2008 here. Fundamentally, the economy is strong.
Listen, fundamentally, the U.S. economy is growing at an average annual pace of 2%. The global economy is growing by 3%. That's not a recession. We are still in a bull market, the longest on record. And that even if we were to tip into a recession, even if the market were to slide into a bear market down 20%, that's normal. Things can happen. So I know that it is very difficult to absorb these kinds of days. You want it only to be going from like the bottom left of your graph, diagonally up to the top right. That's just not how it is to be an investor. So everyone just needs to take a deep breath. One last note, because of the little bit of panic that's circulating, 10-year treasury yields are dropping precipitously. If you are looking for a house, if you are thinking about refinancing, if for some reason you didn't catch the wave the last time, now's a great time to start to look at that.
CBS Senior Business Analyst Jill Schlesinger. Thank you, Jill.
Take care.
Time now for your Daily Dose of Kindness, brought to you by Mike Novak and ListWithNovak.com. In today's story of an adopted boy who sees a part of himself in old dogs can teach us all a lesson in compassion, CBS's Steve Hartman has the story.
8-year-old Robbie Gay loves an underdog.
Hey.
Bring him to the Flagler County Humane Society in Palm Coast, Florida, as we did, and ask him to find a favorite.
Can I get in here?
He will seek out the oldest, mangiest, least adoptable mutt of the lot.
There's something about old dogs but I just like.
Do you see yourself in these dogs?
Yes, sir.
He knows what it feels like not to be loved and cared for. He's the most hopeful, optimistic, and genuinely caring kid who has absolutely no reason to be that way.
Robbie's adoptive mom, Maria, says before he entered the foster system, Robbie was a holy terror. So badly abused, he was twice hospitalized with brain injuries. Then, 2 years ago, Maria and her husband, Charles, adopted him.
It was just a good day.
What did that day mean to you?
Everything.
He has come a long way, except in this one respect. Maria says he could not cry. Despite the horrors of his past, or maybe because of them, the kid was a stone. Until earlier this month.
One of Robbie's old dogs, Buffy, had to be put down. He wanted to hold her till the very end and insisted his mom take pictures of the process. Perhaps because he knew what was about to happen. After Robbie finally let go, he told his mom, "I know how it feels not to be loved or cared for, and I don't want any animal of mine to feel that way." Nor does he want any foster kid to feel that way.
Because people don't want older people and older dogs. They only want babies and puppies.
He is so aware that it could have gone totally differently for him. And in these older dogs, Robbie's found a place to practice compassion.
Someday, Robbie wants to adopt older foster children himself.
Go up and knock on the door.
But until then, to show his commitment and do what he can, he has vowed to adopt as many old dogs as his parents will allow.
Do you love her?
Today, it's a lame, snaggle-toothed shih tzu named Molly. Molly's owner had to go into assisted living. But now Molly has a new home, thanks to the sweet little boy who sees his reflection in the eyes of the suffering. Steve Hartman, on the road, near Palm Coast, Florida.
Wow. How old is that kid?
He is 10.
10. Wow. Joining us from the G and Ursula Show, which you can hear from 9 to noon, weekdays on Chi Radio, here's G Scott. So I missed the XFL game on Saturday.
So did you and 7,000 people in attendance.
And 7,000 people fewer were there. And they lost besides, which has restarted this whole argument about whether it's here to stay or not. You think it is?
I think so. Dave Ross is good football. It is very good football. I've been talking to other NFL players that are currently the Seahawks, former Seahawks, about this game. And the only thing that is not up there yet, and it's going to happen as time goes, is the quarterback play. The quarterback play isn't as good as the NFL, which is understandable. But I have some questions. I have some reasons why it can stay and some reasons why it can't stay. And here's some reasons why it can stay. It can stay because, again, these are former players that you probably, they were at some colleges before and they were backups in the NFL and they just were missing a little bit here and a little bit there. So they maybe didn't make those rosters. So now they're on this team. So there's NFL talent on these XFL teams, but it's just the quarterback play. The interest comes in where, for example, there were 7,000 less fans in the stadium here in Seattle for the game. That's understandable when it happens because the hype kind of goes down a little bit. But a lot of times people, Dave, they watch football because they know who that person is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They watch. So sometimes if you're watching a game, and by the way, I'm a football person. There's times when I'm watching the XFL games, I got my phone in my hand. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, never heard of that person. I'll Google him. Oh, okay. That's what he went to Wake Forest. Or he went to this college. So sometimes it's more fun to watch games when you know them. Now, here is the dilemma. Will the XFL allow players to come right from high school in the future?
Mm.
Right now, the NFL has a rule. The NFL has a rule that you have to be 3 years removed from high school in order to play professionally. Mm-hmm. And so probably it's like, well, gee, why is that? Well, there's a thing called the NCAA that is a billion-dollar industry. So we know the NFL has a rule. The question going forward, will they attach that rule to the XFL? And my thing is this, Dave. If the XFL said, you know what? You could come right from high school. So the kids or someone has a choice. So someone like, let's use Trevor Lawrence that's right now that's playing for
Clemson.
For Clemson. Or let's lose locally. Jacob Eason, who was playing here for the University of Washington. Jacob Eason, I believe if he played in the XFL right now, he'd be the top quarterback in the game,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So you say,
why not?
Why not? Why yeah. not let a kid, if he's good enough, be mm-hmm. able to leave high school and go right to the XFL? But the problem would be, Dave.
Yes.
NCAA loses what? A lot of
so
money.
What? They're about to change now, too, to allow players to make money. This would be a fair way to let players do that.
Very good point. Now, in January of 2021, it's going to be where players, NCAA college football players, will be able to make money off of their likeness. Now, the small print hasn't been printed out there yet, so we're kind of waiting on that. But going back to it, so that's going to be the questions. I know fans, if someone is, let's just say some kid is playing in college or something like that, or didn't get an opportunity, got hurt, and he's out for a while and wasn't able to make it back with that college, but he latches on with an XFL mm-hmm. team, I don't think fans would have a problem with that. I don't think fans would have, because the truth of the matter is, school isn't for everyone.
That's it. That's exactly right. I would love to see this whole thing change. So instead of the NCAA being the farm team for the NFL, it's the XFL. We get back to colleges being about academics and learning
something.
And the
kids can make money while they're prepping for the NFL. It's a trade school for the NFL.
That's crazy.
But here's the problem. The problem is when you have good college football teams, then enrollment for the school goes up.
Yeah, for the wrong reasons.
Oh!
For the wrong reasons.
And then you have people like Aunt Becky, they cheat, and they want to get into these USC schools because they want to be around that. It's crazy how it happens.
Then we need to talk about Eastern Washington here one of these days, too, because their school is asking whether or not they should get rid of the entire athletic department.
Well,
the teachers are one of them is raising the issue.
We're training
there. We can
people
talk about
to
that later
to...
in the week.
We're training people to earn a reliable living, and the NFL is not that. I mean, it's a very small percentage to make it in the NFL.
I love the XFL, though. I really do. It's a great product.
Coronavirus has spread significantly this past week outside of China. Northern Italy now in lockdown mode. Schools have closed. Public gatherings are canceled, including Venice's carnival. And one carnival goer, not happy. He spoke through a translator.
It is useless to stop a carnival because there are hospitals and bars and supermarkets and restaurants and trains and planes and ferries, which are all open spaces. And so how do you solve this problem? Stopping a carnival? It's all ridiculous.
More than 220 people in Italy are infected. 5 have died as of this morning. Italy still has not identified patient zero, the patient who brought the virus into the country. Sky News spoke to a man in the Hong Kong subway who was seen wearing a mask.
Really afraid that I will just get that disease because this is quite strong. And I feel that the government didn't like help us enough, like getting masks, like stopping the patients from coming here.
South Korea has the highest number of infections outside China. Over 830 is the latest count. The World Health Organization held a press conference this morning to update the statistics. They have sent 30,000 sets of protective equipment to vulnerable countries in Africa. A trail runner literally crawled for help when he became injured on the Olympic Peninsula. And Cairo's Aaron Granillo is here with the remarkable story of his survival.
Yeah, Joseph Oldendorf. He was running on this remote snow-covered trail near Olympic National Park on Friday night. He was about 12 miles into his run when he hit a patch of ice, slipped, and broke his leg. He yelled for help. No one was around. He pulled out his cell phone but had no reception. So Oldendorf actually started crawling toward the trailhead.
I had no idea how long it was going to be, and I knew that I was still probably 6 miles down trail, 5 miles.
He tells Cairo 7 TV he was on all fours fighting through freezing temperatures.
When it was still, it was just kind of throbbing. If I moved it at all, it felt like knives all over.
Now, he finally crawled himself into cell phone range just after midnight, about 7 hours after crawling. About 4 hours later, so about 10 and a half total hours Rescue crews finally found him after he broke his leg. He was airlifted to Harborview, suffering from hypothermia. But Dave, Oldendorf is actually reportedly out of the hospital this morning.
That is that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Did the story say how far he crawled before he actually got into cell phone range?
So the rescue crew said he was about 4 or 5 miles into the trailhead itself, which is unusual for a rescue crew to go that far in, they say. But again, he said he was crawling for a total of 7 hours until he got back into cell phone range. This is after running for 12 miles of a 20-mile planned run. So he was a substantial amount into that trail.
Wow. Yeah. Quite a story. He was known as Mad Mike Hughes. He was a self-taught rocket builder who believed the Earth was flat and said that he would not change his mind until he saw the curvature of the Earth with his own eyes. And so for years, Mike Hughes built homemade rockets, and he would launch himself several thousand feet into the air, and then a parachute would shoot out of the rocket, and he would float back to Earth. He came away with injuries, but he always survived until Saturday when he launched himself, and this time the parachutes failed to deploy. Mike Hughes was widely ridiculed for refusing to believe the ample evidence that the world is round, which anybody who's been on a long plane ride understands. But he just had no trust in the public education system. He thought that he was being brainwashed.
I believe the world is a different shape than what we were taught in those programming centers, which is called public school system, okay? And I quit in the 11th grade 3 different times because I was fed up with it back in 1972 to 74. I was just done with it. And if I'd known then what I know now, I would have quit after the 6th grade.
He is not the only one who believes this. There is a lot of doubt, apparently, according to the internet anyway, on what many of us consider the most basic facts. A mostly online community is fueled in large part by YouTube videos. They have a yearly conference. Conference presentations have names like Space is Fake, Testing the Moon, A Global Lie Perspective. Dr. Ashley Landrum is a psychologist at Texas Tech University. He attended the conference and spoke with CNN and explains why conspiracy theorists think the government is keeping some huge secret from them.
Some of the people who are conspiracy theorists really wouldn't put it past authorities and other officials who have power to hold these secrets. And there's actually research showing that people who believe conspiracies would actually be willing to engage in a conspiracy themselves.
Anyway, Mike Hughes paid a pretty high price for wanting to see the Earth's curvature for himself.
Well, what's on the other side if it's flat?
That's the big question, Chris.
Where do these people fly into or fly from to get here?
Well, they fly from a flat plane. If you look at some, have you looked at any of this stuff on the internet?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. They visualize this flat, it's either a rectangle or it could be a flat disc, right? But if you work out the math, because of the way gravity works, right? In the center of the disc, you're sort of okay. As you get to the edges, there is so much mass on one side of you as opposed to the other that buildings would slant.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Where's the water go?
Where does the water go? Well, it stays in one place.
Sorry, I know a man is dead
yes.
here, but still, it's just like, those are questions always come up to me when I hear flat earthing discussions.
I got to say, that is a deep commitment to independent research, but I'm sincerely hoping no one tries to repeat it. The next big presidential test, of course, is South Carolina. Former Vice President Joe Biden has a slim lead over Senator Bernie Sanders. And after Sanders' major victory in Nevada on Saturday, Biden's going to need this pretty badly. Some voters there, like Kenesha Thompson, say they have not yet settled on a candidate to vote for.
I'm still trying to figure out, but I know the time is coming to where I'm going to have to pick a candidate. And at this point, I'm not quite sure yet.
At the Rock Grove AME Zion Church in Rock Hill, Reverend Dr. Titus Thorne says this should not be just about popularity.
It's important that we don't get fooled or blindsided or misled by popularity.
that we really examine the candidates truly to see what they represent for us and what they can do for us.
CBS's Danya Bacchus is in Charleston.
Political experts say this race can give the winner a crucial boost.
It's really going to be, I think, a tiebreaker. It's going to be a gateway to the Super Tuesday states that are coming just 3 days later.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is surging after a big victory in the Nevada caucuses, but a prominent South Carolina lawmaker expressed skepticism about his politics.
South Carolinians are pretty leery about that title, socialist.
It's taxes on billionaires.
Sanders defended the cost of his programs on 60 Minutes.
When you help the billionaires and you help Wall Street, hey, of course we can pay for it. That's what America's supposed to be about. Well, I disagree.
Next candidate debate is Tuesday. Seven Democrats will be on stage, and voting in South Carolina will be on Saturday. Anna Scott joins us. Her beat is the legislature this year. The session is getting close to an end. A lot of bills have been resuscitated. And what happened to the sex ed bill?
It is still moving through. It, in fact, we'll get a key committee vote later in this week. It's already passed the House. And this is really one of the most controversial bills of the session. More than 700 people packed a hearing and overflow room last week to weigh in on this bill as it came up for a committee hearing in the Senate. The gist of the bill, by September of next year, every school district in the state would have to have a comprehensive sexual health education program taught in kindergarten through 12th grade. It's got to be evidence-informed, medically and scientifically accurate, and age-appropriate. School districts cannot opt out. Parents can. But that opt-out option was not enough to bring a lot of parents around on this, with massive opposition mounting, especially from the east side of the Cascades. Senator Claire Wilson is a longtime educator and a school board president in Federal Way. She's the bill's sponsor, and she started last week's hearing by trying to clear up some misinformation and really lay out the three things that she thought people should know about this.
Number one, first and foremost, this bill is about safety. It's about giving students the knowledge that they need to recognize and resist inappropriate behaviors, from small children targeted by pedophiles to older students pressured to have sex by their peers.
Next.
Second, at every grade level, curriculum is age appropriate. Young people are taught basic concepts such as stranger danger, good touch, bad touch, using your words instead of your hands, and they learn to respect others' bodies and personal space, as well as their own, to protect themselves. In older grades, students are taught how to recognize and resist abusive or coercive behaviors, medical and economic consequences of potential choices, and how to make sound decisions about their health and their future. Perhaps most importantly of all, they are taught about affirmative consent.
And she said that's crucial in the Me Too era, with one in three 12th grade girls reporting that they have been forced into unwanted kissing, sexual touch, or sex. Finally, she says the other thing to know about this bill is it's about health.
Young people ages 15 to 24 represent one-fourth of the sexually active population, but acquire half of all new sexually transmitted infections.
So she laid that out before this crowd. There's overflow people in other rooms coming in to testify. A lot of them agreed with her, parents, students, and teachers.
Having these conversations about sexual health, suicide, drugs do not increase numbers. It prevents them.
I've heard people discuss, you know, the traumatic experiences possibly of role-playing these situations, but this is the kind of role-playing that will help you engage in these activities.
It can also change self-image, gender roles, and learning how to express yourself, especially for females who don't feel comfortable in their own body. These foundations can and will prevent further child sexual abuse in the state of Washington.
Every single quarter, I've had at least one student come and talk to me about dating violence. They're not getting the appropriate information about affirmative consent.
But a huge line of people who came to oppose it.
This bill will make the future generations dare each other to challenges like Molest Me Mondays we heard about from Spokane. Please be aware of the other side.
I oppose this bill. I feel that it takes away my responsibility and privilege and the freedom that I have to teach my children what I think that they need to know. And not just from me as a parent, but from every parent here in Washington.
After this hearing in the overflow room, one of the Republicans on this panel came into the room to talk to those who were all in opposition to this bill and said, vowed to stop this from passing. She was met with huge cheers. So we'll see what happens. State School Superintendent Chris Reichdahl tells me, and I had been talking to him about this bill since last session when it almost passed. He wants this done. He's optimistic that it gets passed this year.
What was that phrase? Molest Me Mondays?
It's something that happened in Spokane. It's kind of like a Snapchat internet challenge where it is what it sounds like, where a bunch of kids
Okay, well, that's a bad thing, right? So
yes.
Kids should be educated to
not do that. But
not do that, right.
This particular father felt that having these discussions in classrooms
makes it more likely.
Everybody's going to try to one-up one another. He was very upset about social media as a whole and what that does with kids. And, you know, this is the curriculum. So what this is there's 27 school districts will be able to choose.
This is a stack of paper an inch and a half high.
These are the 27 different lesson plans on the state school superintendent website that the districts would be able to choose from. They are age appropriate. There's kindergarten through second grade.
Yeah.
The first one teaches about, in the low grades, teaches about what different families might look like. Two mommies, two daddies, different races.
So this is the other thing that's got people. So there's the people who object are also worried this would normalize homosexuality?
I think, yes. There's definitely that concern. But then on the other side of that.
But homosexuality has existed throughout human history. So.
Yes, and it's I would say it is somewhat normalized, at least nowadays. But we heard from students, recent graduates of high school who are in the LGBTQ community, who said they were not addressed in whatever sexual health education they had in their schools because it's not in the curriculum. This mm-hmm. curriculum includes that. So we have that. There's in the kindergarten through 12th or through second grade curriculum, some very detailed lessons about body parts. I mean, really detailed lessons. That gave me a little pause.
I'm sorry, which grade was this?
Kindergarten through second. And then in the older grades, they get a little bit more detailed. But teaching about every part of the body, what parts are sensitive, what happens with each part to identify them. And it's in a very respectable way, but it's making sure kids know what's what so that it protects them against knowing that no one should touch them
there. I can see where that would be, worrisome for parents. Because, of course, kids do that on their own anyway. But,
right.
But when you take it, I mean, we there are four of us, or two boys and two girls. We'd sometimes take baths together. So, yeah. What is it that when do parents think it is appropriate to start this kind of education?
When they decide. And as far as those among in the opposition group.
But they do have that choice, right? You're telling me that the parents who do not want this could opt out.
They can opt out. But there's some it doesn't sound to me like the school district would have to inform them right away.
They could opt out?
No.
I think the word will get around.
There was an amendment that didn't get passed. I don't know if it's that the kids will let them know that this curriculum is coming up or what kind of notification they get that they're going to be entering into this curriculum at a certain stage. So that's not quite clear to me. That's what I heard as far as testimony goes, that there was concern from parents about that.
Concern that the schools would start teaching this without giving anybody a heads up?
Like not sending a letter home kind of a
thing?
Why
would they do that? That would be stupid.
Well, agreed.
People hate it when that happens. So why would a school district do that?
You would think they wouldn't, especially given this. So, again, that was somewhat what I heard from parents. And I think perhaps that's some misinformation. But there's, in the later grades, we're talking about role playing. In the junior high years, you've got some role playing about person one and person two. One wants to start having sex, the other does not. How do you have that conversation? In the front of the class, right? Yeah. You're role playing. So there was concerns raised about that. But on the other side, you had people testify, look, this is going to be a real conversation. Kids are sexually active and you want them to be prepared. Do you want to be the parent that's not comfortable having these discussions with your child, not prepping them for this? And then they are into this on their own. And they don't know what affirmative consent is. They end up getting involved with the dating violence. Both sides. You want to teach everyone how not to be the person who does that, has sex with someone when they weren't wanting it. And then the other side, know when to resist that. There's so much covered here.
Yeah. Okay. Hannah Scott, thank you.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to the show's podcast. We're happy you're here.
And you can keep up with the show and find some of the stories from today online at MyNorthWest.com.